All right, this morning we are beginning a new study in the book of Proverbs. And this is going to be team taught. So I'm not going to be the only one teaching this one. We're going to be teaching. I'm going to be teaching, and the elders are going to be teaching, except for James, who is up with the teens this quarter. So from now until Memorial Day, we're going to be in more or less a kind of rotation. And there are a few reasons for that. An important reason for that is that Maypearl Church of Christ is a family. And I should not be the only voice that you hear, because that's not how families work. And I think it's important that we hear other voices, other opinions, other styles of teaching. I think we should be a collaboration. So that's a big reason for that. Why are we studying Proverbs? Proverbs sort of picks up where we left off with evil last week. We ended with this practical question: how then shall we live in light of what we've studied about God and the story of evil in the Bible and what he's doing about it in new creation? We ended with this whole question of how do we live? And that's what Proverbs is totally about. How do we live in the world? And where our evil study was kind of theoretical and abstract, I think it's time for some balance with something that's much more practical, hands-on. Also, the book of Proverbs challenges us to think differently than most books of the Bible challenge us to think. Because it's not black or white. It's not cut and dry. You can take this to the bank. The book of Proverbs forces us to change our expectations of what we think we're going to get when we open our Bibles, at least when we open to these 20 or 30 pages. That means the book of Proverbs is inviting us to be participants rather than just consumers. We're not just reading the story of Saul and taking it in, but Proverbs is challenging us to put this proverb and this proverb side by side and go, well, wait a minute. What is the wise thing to do here? Because this proverb says this, but this one. And it's inviting us to be more engaged in the process of making meaning out of the book in a way that other books just don't do to that extent. Another really practical reason that we're doing Proverbs is because this is at least my first time out with this team teaching collaboration thing. This book lends itself to a really topical approach. And it's easy to say, hey, you take this, and you take this one, and you take this one. So it's a good way for us to sort of ease into something that we're trying for the first time. The goal for today is to introduce the book of Proverbs and get us oriented to it. We're going to look at the book's own stated purpose, and we're going to get familiar with the basic structure of the book and draw out a few key themes. So, sound good?
Yeah.
Worthwhile morning? All right. So, we're in Proverbs chapter 1. It says, "The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel." All right, let's pause right there. What does the word proverb mean? What does it mean to you, regardless of what it means in the Bible? First of all, just what do you think of when you hear the word proverb?
Wise saying or instruction.
A wise saying or instruction?
Wisdom.
Okay. Like a ditty, easy to remember, easy to...
A little ditty?
Yeah, easy to remember, a little thing. It's easy to remember.
Yeah, there's something catchy about it. Can we think of any American proverbs?
Penny saved is a penny earned.
A penny saved is a penny earned.
Stitch in time saves nine.
A stitch in time saves nine. You notice both of those have kind of a cadence to them. Just two?
A bird in the hand is worth two in the bush.
It took me forever to figure out what that one means. Which is sometimes how Proverbs are, I think. They invite you to ponder. Let's see. How about out of the frying pan, into the fire. Here's a good one. A jack of all trades is a master of none. Anybody know the rest? But still better than a master of one.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Never heard that. Never, haven't heard that? I just heard that maybe last year. Proverbs are public wisdom. They're not these divine revelations written on tablets of stone coming down off the mountain. That's not what Proverbs are. They're discerned. They are divine revelation because all truth is God's truth. But they're not given through an individual. A proverb is discerned by a community. What confirms the truth of a proverb is not, well, Moses said it, so it must be true. What confirms a proverb is we have all experienced having the bird in the hand and seeing the two in the bush and knowing that if I want to grab that one, I got to let go of this one. We have all experienced someone who is a jack of all trades and how they're really a master of none, but it's kind of better that they can tinker in 100 different areas. What confirms the truth of a proverb is its common use. The fact that people actually say it is what confirms. Yeah, well, we all agree. This is based on experience. And then it says this is the Proverbs of Solomon. Solomon is the master sage. When we first meet Solomon in 1 Kings, his mother does a little conniving to get him to become king. But when he becomes king, he's like a new Adam figure, the same way Saul is a new Adam figure, the same way Aaron is or Moses is. We talked about in the evil study and last week in the anointed study, these new Adam figures. God appears to Solomon in a dream and he offers him whatever he asks for. And Solomon admits that he is like a child who doesn't know his left hand from his right. He doesn't know good and evil. And rather than taking from the tree, he wants God to teach him good and evil. Give me wisdom so that I'll know how to lead well. And we're told in 1 Kings 4, verse 23, that he spoke over 3,000 proverbs, which means that this book is only a fraction of his wisdom. This is just a piece of what he knew. Solomon did not write 3,000 proverbs. He didn't compose them out of thin air. He spoke them because proverbs are not an individual's divine revelation. It's when I ask you to come up with a proverb, we're like, we come up with one, we come up with a second or a third. Maybe we could come up with several that we know. But could you come up with 3,000 of them? I don't know that I could. Solomon is a collector of public wisdom. He's a gatherer. But as we're going to see, there are several parts in this book that are not explicitly connected to Solomon. They're actually explicitly connected to other figures. And yet, even when Agur is the one speaking in chapter 30, or Lemuel is speaking in chapter 31, or even in the days of Hezekiah when part of this is being written, it's still connected to Solomon because all wisdom is Solomon's wisdom, because Solomon is the one who's gathering public wisdom. Does that make sense? Kind of. This is one of the few precious few books in the Bible that tells us why it exists, that is upfront and explicit about why it exists. And here's what it says. To know wisdom and instruction, to understand words of insight, to receive instruction in wise dealing, in righteousness, justice, and equity, to give prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the youth. Let the wise hear and increase in learning. Let the one who understands obtain guidance, to understand a proverb and a saying, the words of the wise and their riddles. So, what is going to happen to us if we spend some time pondering the book of Proverbs?
You're going to learn.
You're going to become a wise individual. And in particular, you're going to learn about righteousness, justice, and equity. In the law, righteousness and justice and equity are demanded and expected and articulated. Here's what righteousness looks like. In Proverbs, righteousness and justice and equity are a result of spending time in the book of Proverbs. They are promised. They're not expected, they're promised. Does that make sense? See that difference?
Say it again, please.
In the law, righteousness, justice, and equity are expected of you. In Proverbs, they are promised to you. I do have one question, because I know we have different Bibles in the room, different translations. That fifth line, to give prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the youth. Does anybody have a different word for simple?
Naive.
Naive?
Simple in the notes, but naive.
Okay. Everybody has either simple or naive? So the word is pati, which comes from the word for open. So you could say like open-minded, but really the idea is someone who has not yet been morally formed. Someone who is a blank slate. And Proverbs wants to, think of like an 8-year-old that is still learning what the rules are, learning how to live, still learning about the deed consequence connection. That's who this book is written for. Someone who is still open, still a blank slate, and they're being shaped by it. That is, Proverbs is about the formation of character. It's not about here's what you have to do. It's about turning you into a certain kind of person. So, what comes to mind for you when you hear the word wisdom?
Wise.
Solid answer.
I don't remember where it came from, but the definition was applied knowledge.
Applied knowledge.
And, I don't remember where that came from. When I hear the word wisdom, I think of Solomon, and I guess it could be applied knowledge, but like when he decided which one was the mother, that to me is wise. Like, who would think of that? I'm not sure I would have thought of that. And so I'm just excited about this because I'm going to finally get it.
Well, we are going to solve all those problems. What else do you think of? What picture comes to mind for you? Someone who's level-headed.
Maybe an older person, you think of older people wise.
Yeah, I'd never think of like a 20-year-old when I think of the word wisdom. No offense to anybody on the side of the room.
But somebody who doesn't get defensive, doesn't feel like they've got to prove anything. They just got it.
They're not reactive. Yeah. Okay. Character plays a part?
Yeah.
Absolutely it does. Absolutely.
I think confidence and wisdom.
Confidence and wisdom.
Discernment is the word that comes to my mind too.
Yes.
What's that?
Discernment.
Experience.
Wisdom in the Bible is it's like skill at the art of living. Someone who is deft at their ability to just live well. And that includes decision making, it includes character, it includes confidence and humility and all these things. A wise person knows the right thing to say or do in a given situation, and then they do it. And wouldn't you kill to know what the right thing to say is sometimes? I mean, maybe you wouldn't kill for that, but... Okay, so how do we get knowledge? How do we get wisdom? Well, we're told, verse 7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. By the way, in Proverbs, there are 8 or 10 words, probably, that are all connected. Discernment, wisdom, knowledge, learning, prudence, all these different words. And they're sometimes used interchangeably. There are fine differences in nuance, but we're always talking about the same general idea. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. What is the fear of the Lord? Well, we could talk about reverence, and I imagine that's probably the first thing some of us thought of. What I think of, the analogy I always like to use, is a live wire sticking out of the wall at a construction site. I'm not terrified of it, but I'm also not stupid enough to just approach it without the right kind of protective equipment. So I have a very healthy fear of that, but it's not, I don't walk around, there's a live wire. Unless I know that there is a live wire, but there's 10 of them sticking out, one of them's live, and better hope you choose, like, no. What does fear of the Lord have to do with making good decisions in life? Well, it's a precondition for making right decisions. Fear of the Lord is a precondition for wisdom and for ethics. Part of what Proverbs is doing, especially in the first movement, we're going to go through the outline. Does anybody still need an outline? Okay. John, would you mind grabbing one? What Proverbs is doing, especially in the first movement, is to show you what happens in a person's life when they don't fear the Lord, so that it will instill in you the fear of the Lord. So what I want to do with the rest of our time this morning is walk through the outline that you have. And we're just going to build this together, and I want to get us a 50,000 foot view of the architecture of the book of Proverbs, because I think that can be really helpful. So first, we have the introduction and purpose statement that we just walked through. And what follows those 7 verses are 2 major movements of 9 chapters and then like 20 chapters, followed by 2 concluding chapters. And the introduction and purpose statement applies to everything else that follows. So your first major movement, I'm calling it speeches and poems. It runs from chapter 1 through chapter 9. And you can probably, if your Bible has the formatting for it, you can probably just tell by looking at the page that there is a difference when you move from chapter 9 to chapter 10. In fact, turn to chapter 10 and just Don't read it, but just look at the visual formatting of the page. Can you tell that something has changed when you go from 9 to 10? There's more groupings in 9?
I don't know. We can have to glance at it. So
yeah. No, it's just, I'm just asking you to do it at a glance. Yeah, so in 9 you have like clusters of poems, and then in chapter 10 it's just line after line after line after line for the next 20 chapters. There's a very clear division between 9 and 10. The first movement contains 14 poems. The first 9 chapters, 14 poems about the value of wisdom and the danger of folly, the danger of adultery especially, and the benefits that will accrue to you if you do get wisdom. And in some ways, it's kind of like if you go to a comedy show and somebody comes out to open for the main show and they're warming up the audience, or at a concert, you may have a band that comes out and warms up the audience first. That's kind of what chapters 1 through 9 are. They're warming you up for the real thing, which is chapter 10 through 29. The second movement of the chapter, or second movement of the book, I'm calling the Grand Collection. This spans 20 chapters. It's what the book is best known for. It's just proverb after proverb after proverb, often with no discernible design or flow. It's kind of like, has anybody ever done cross training? If you go to like a, I've never been to CrossFit, but this is what I imagine it's like, where you do something with your arms for 60 seconds, and then you move to the next station, and you have to do something with your legs, and then you move to the next station, and you have to do something with your back, and then you go to the next station and do your shoulders, and then you just like do the circuit, and you're moving from one thing to the next. Or if you run on one day, and then the next day you're doing weights. The book of Proverbs kind of reads like that. You're constantly, oh, this one was about humility, but this one's about hard work, and this one is about honesty, and this one's about, you're constantly moving from one topic to another. It doesn't feel like there's any kind of flow most of the time. Sometimes you'll get a little run of like 4, 5, 6 Proverbs in a row that are all about laziness. But that's about as good as it gets in terms of a design. And then chapter 30, which is the first of our concluding chapters, is the sayings of Agur. And we're going to come back to him. We don't know who Agur is. He's unknown outside the book of Proverbs. And then chapter 31, you have, it's called the Oracle of Lemuel. I got to think about why it's called an oracle instead of sayings or proverbs or something. But Lemuel, also unknown outside the book of Proverbs, and his sayings are most famous for the Proverbs 31 woman. And we'll talk about her in just a few minutes. Okay. Any questions to this point? We're going to go back in and fill in more detail, but any thoughts or concerns or...
I don't have that, but I have a thought.
Okay.
It's just a thought. It's not a concern or a question. And that's just interesting to me that in Psalms, which is the preceding book, you have writings about who God is and what he did and how awesome he is. And then in Proverbs, you talk about the fear or the awe of God. In that, to me, that's kind of an excellent placement by people who were not...
Who had obviously spent some time in these books.
Well, but, yeah, but not really trying to necessarily write a response or write a... Here's the practical application of knowing who God is. Does that make sense? I mean, that's not why Proverbs was written. Proverbs was written on its own.
Yeah.
And then put that way. But that's just...
All
right. These feel like the phases of life. This is weird, I know. Speeches and poems. I feel like when I was younger, I got a lot of speeches from my dad. Lots of speeches. Long ones. And then
long ones.
The Grand Collection is my mind right now. It's going from one thing to the next, to the next, to the next, and like kids and chickens and God and the Bible class and like all the things. And then the sayings of Agur, a call to humanity or to humility. I just read a few lines and it's like, before I die, give me humility and wisdom and all these things. So you're older, and then a portion of wisdom when you've gone through all these things, you're at the end of life. That's what a portion of wisdom is.
Yeah. The Proverbs 31 woman feels like the capstone of the whole thing.
It's like the phases.
Well, that's kind of what I had always thought this was probably not written all in a week. It was written over a lifetime in every day when you get up, you may have a different thought. If you write it down like a ledger or whatever, you're not going to think about the same thing one day after the next for days and days and then start on something else. When you get up, you think about this. And, you know, before you go to sleep at night, you think about what has happened during that day that you might write down. Yeah. And maybe the order was just a starting and an ending of a long life.
I hadn't thought about this in terms of following the scheme of someone's life. I have thought of Proverbs as kind of like the younger book, and to some extent kind of naive and optimistic about how life might work. And then Ecclesiastes is kind of like middle age and so disillusionment with life. And then Job being toward the end of life saying, God is good. Come what may, God is good. So I've thought about that in terms of the scheme of a person's life, but I had not thought about Proverbs as the scheme of someone's life, and that's really interesting. Okay, so speeches and poems. The first section breaks out into 10 speeches and 4 interludes, and I think on your outline I have written down where the 4 interludes are, so everything else is a speech. And the speeches are really easy to identify because they all begin the same way. They begin with, my son, listen to me. Heed my instruction. Take my words and bind them around your neck. Pay attention and think about my words always, that kind of thing. But it always begins with, my son, listen to me. Which is to say, these 10 poems are a father instructing a son. And his instructions are either warning his son about the consequences of certain kinds of behavior or about encouraging him to pursue wisdom and all the good things that are going to happen to him if he does. The speeches contain warnings against peer pressure, against adultery or prostitution, but then encouraging the value of piety and honesty. And then the 4 interludes are largely about wisdom herself. And I say wisdom herself because wisdom is personified as a woman who talks to people and says, come to my house and learn. Come to me and I'll give you all of these great things. Wisdom is portrayed as a virtuous woman, and folly is portrayed as a promiscuous and dangerous woman. So in chapter 1, verse 20, that first interlude. Wisdom is this woman who stands out in the open. She's standing in the city square and she calls to foolish passersby. And she says, turn aside and come to me and pay attention. And here's what will happen to you if you don't learn from me. In chapter 3, verse 13, wisdom is this woman who offers profit that's better than gold, and long life, and honor, and peace. In chapter 8, she is this virtuous woman who helps kings to reign, and she hates wickedness, and she promises wealth and honor. And she talks about where she came from. And that was actually a really important passage about that came into play when Christians were dealing with what is Jesus? Is Jesus just human? Is he just divine? Is he creation? Is he God? That whole question, Proverbs 8 was a big part of that. And we'll talk about that in a few weeks. I think Steve's got that one. I'm kidding. I've got that one. There are 2 women in these opening chapters. One is Lady Wisdom. And the other is identified in a few different ways. In chapter 9, she's just called Folly. But in other places, she is your neighbor's wife, or she is a foreign woman, or she's a prostitute. And the idea is that the son whom the father is teaching in all these speeches is eventually going to unite himself with one of these 2 women. He's going to have to make a decision about the kind of life that he wants to lead. And the father is aiming to make wisdom look as brilliant as possible and to make folly look as dangerous as possible. And one of the key ways that he does that is with the imagery of adultery. These chapters are full of warnings about adultery, which surely has to do with actual physical adultery. But it also operates at the symbolic level, because adultery destroys the integrity of the family, and it destroys the integrity of the community, and ultimately it will destroy a young man's life. That's what the father tells him. If you go to your neighbor's wife, your neighbor is going to kill you. You're taking your own life into your hands when you do this. Well, what happens to you when you unite yourself with folly? It destroys the family, it destroys the community, and it will ultimately destroy you. So at the end of this movement, after the 10 speeches and the 4 interludes, you come to chapter 9. And chapter 9 is a call to decision. There are these 2 banquets. Lady Wisdom is preparing a banquet, and she goes out into the city and she says, "Everybody come to my house and feast. And everything's going to be great. You're going to live long and have honor and all these things." But then Dame Folly also prepares a feast. And she doesn't go out into the city. She just sits on her porch. And anybody who's walking by, she says, "Come on inside. I've got sweet bread. I've got stolen water. And it's wonderful." But what people who go to her house don't realize is that they are the ones on the menu. They will be killed. There for dinner. Okay, that's the first movement. So now, you the reader, you've read these 9 chapters. You've been exposed to here's the benefits of wisdom and here are the drawbacks of folly. And now you need to make a decision whose feast you're going to go to. And whose feast do you want to go to? The wise woman. I want to go to Lady Wisdom's house. All right, well, then all you have to do is turn the page to chapter 10. And then you have a feast of hundreds and hundreds of wise sayings and riddles and enigmas. And it's through meditating on them, pondering them, that you become wise. The grand collection addresses a wide variety of themes, topics like marriage, work, honesty, sex, pride, death, purity, greed, prayer, health, discipline, trust, and I could go on. Hundreds and hundreds of these little proverbs. And remember, these are accumulated insights from generations of people who have just been observing how the world works. These are all, you know, I have noticed something. The blessing of the Lord makes rich, and he doesn't add sorrow with it. I have noticed that the hope of the righteous brings joy, but the expectation of the wicked will perish. These are observations about the way that the world works. They're not commands. This practice of observation and insight continues even after the death of Solomon. So turn to chapter 25. The first verse of chapter 25. These are the proverbs of Solomon. All proverbs are Solomon's proverbs, which the men of Hezekiah, king of Judah, copied. Chapter 25 through 29 are identified as from the period of Hezekiah. It's like the book of Proverbs is this open document that a later king, I'm trying to think, got to do the math, 200 years later-ish, something like that, they come along and they add more proverbs because it's a living document. And anyone who's gathering wisdom is gathering Solomon's wisdom. Also, somebody was pointing this out. There's very little in this that is distinctively Jewish or distinctively Christian. There is the name of the Lord. It does appear with some regularity, especially in chapters 15 and 16. But if you're a Canaanite and you find the book of Proverbs, You could quite easily scratch out the name of Yahweh and write in the name Baal, and no one in your town would know the difference. Because it's not, whenever it brings up the name of God, it's not talking about him as the one who brought us up out of Egypt, or the one who made a covenant with David, or the God of Moses, or of Abraham. And so it's quite easy to substitute his name out. This isn't something that's deeply rooted into the story of the Bible. This is just how the world works. Whether you are Jewish or a Christian or a Canaanite, it's always true that good news from a far country is like cold water to a thirsty soul. It's always true. The point in reading these and recording these is that you would feast on them, internalize them, memorize them, ponder them, and notice how true they are as you yourself begin to use these proverbs. And so far, I haven't made a real good habit of actually implementing these, except as my hair has begun to turn gray, I have found myself saying, gray hair is the crown of the aged, and it is won in a righteous life.
And you're right.
I'm hearing some amens. All of the Bible is worthy of our attention and our study, but there are parts of the Bible that seem to be designed for memorization and pondering on their face. They're built for that. Okay, Agur in chapter 30, first he admits his own ignorance. In verses 2 through 4, he's like, I'm an unlearned person, how can I learn wisdom? And then in verses 5 and 6, he says, it's by the word of God that I will overcome ignorance. The word of God is a shield to him. And at the end of the chapter, he says, if you've been a fool, here's what you need to do. Stop talking. It's probably good advice for me. That's why I'm tagging in other guys. So it's this call to humility. How are we going to learn wisdom? First, you got to stop talking and start listening. And then the final chapter, the portrait of Lemuel, or the oracle of Lemuel, the portrait of wisdom. It says in chapter 31, verse 1, the words of King Lemuel, an oracle that who taught him? His mother. These are the words that a mother is passing to her son. So you begin with a father instructing a son, and you end with a mother instructing her son. And she lands with this advice about how to reign soberly. It's really pretty heavy-handed about the danger of alcohol, especially when you're in a position of power. And she tells him to defend the poor. But then the whole book comes to this conclusion with a portrait of a woman who has mastered the art of living. This is not a Mother's Day poem. Although it's fine if people want to do that on Mother's Day, but that's not what this is for. This is a description of the life of someone who has reflected on Proverbs and has internalized all of its wisdom. And what does she do? She's hardworking. She's humble. She is prudent about making business decisions. And she does this, and she does this, and she does this. It's a portrait of the wise woman. So we begin with Lady Wisdom and Dame Folly, and we end with a wise lady. Which, incidentally, she is called, in Hebrew, verse 10, it says, an excellent wife who can find. The term is an Isha Chayil. Isha, woman, Chayil, of valor. The only woman in the Bible who is called a woman of valor is Ruth. So in some ways, Ruth may be a reflection on the book of Proverbs as someone who has internalized the wisdom of the book. All right, some ideas for homework. Annette was talking about this morning. Maybe what you want to do over these next 3 months is read one chapter of Proverbs a day. You will finish in March, you'll finish the whole book. In April, you'll have to do two chapters on the last day. And then in May, you can do the whole book in a month. Or maybe what you want to do is just read the first 9 chapters in preparation for next week, because next week we're going to be in the first 9 chapters. But here's one that I would encourage you to do. Identify an area in your life where you're going to focus over the next 3 months, where you want to learn wisdom. Some area that you want to sharpen up. And as you're reading through Proverbs, identify the ones that speak out to that particular area and commit them to memory. You want to find the ones on leadership. You want to find the ones on humility. You want to find the ones on work ethic or whatever. Okay, that is it. Thank you, guys. Yeah.